I'm Patricia Camilleri, and in this series called Talking Books, I shall be asking my guests about their personal relationship with the written word. Very pleased to have with me in the studio today the Reverend Dr. Salvino Caruana. Father Caruana entered the Augustinian community in 1967 and soon started to study philosophy with Inserm here in Malta. He then went on to study at the Augustinian International College Santa Monica in Rome, where he specialized in German language and literature. In 1974, he was awarded a grant to study in Germany.
And he was ordained
in 1975 by Pope Paul VI at the Vatican. Father Caruana then launched into a career as a scholar, gaining degrees and diplomas both in Malta and abroad, including his PhD in 1998. In the same year, he was appointed director of the Augustinian Institute here in Malta, a post which he still holds. And Father Caruana also initiated the very successful annual Augustinian lecture here at the university. He's currently senior lecturer at the Faculty of Theology. Welcome, Father Caruana.
Thank you very much.
Well, a distinguished scholarly career indeed. You must have studied in some of the most fascinating libraries in Europe, in Germany, in Rome, and I'm sure in other cities. Before we talk specifically about St. Augustine and this book which you've just edited, tell me a little bit about your personal feelings when you walk into those hallowed halls of the great libraries of Europe.
Well, good morning, even to the audience. Thank you very much, Pat, for the too generous introduction in my case. Yes, I'm a library mouse, or whatever they call it. I had also the fortune, and sometimes I think I was very fortunate to have some of these great libraries all alone. I remember in Paris, when I was in Paris, I studied also under one of a very great Augustinian scholar, Georges Follier. And when I met him in Paris at the Institut des Augustinien, he said, well, it's summertime, so you have all this great library on Augustine and the Fathers of the Church all alone. So you can imagine. I often visit a very well-known library also in Leuven, Belgium. It's at the Augustinian Institute in Heffeli. And again, when I go, the period is always during summertime, and I have it all alone. There are shelves, thousands of books on Augustine. The same thing happened when I went to Eindhoven in Holland. It's walking into, in my case, according to my estimation, it's a cathedral of books, no shelves, and you see all Augustine, all there is you want to know on Augustine. This one, especially in Eindhoven, in Holland, they specialize in obtaining any book published in any corner of the world on Augustine. So you can imagine my feelings, not having it all alone, but in finding whatever you need, whatever you would like to read on Augustine, in some cases also the Fathers of the Church, which is my other specialization, the works of the Fathers of the Church. But yes, there's some link, call it whatever you like, with books that fascinates me.
And that lovely feeling when you go into these libraries, where you're researching and you're discovering. I think this is one of the most exciting things that one can do. Certainly, I love doing it in my very, very small way. I get a lot of excitement out of actually finding something.
That great aha. Here it is, what I've been looking for weeks or months. And
exactly.
You find it there, the actual Augustine in Latin.
I know that clearly St. Augustine is your passion. You chose the Augustinian community, one presumes, because of your love and admiration for St. Augustine. Were you first inspired to take an interest in him because of something you read or perhaps somebody who introduced you to him?
Yes, when we enter into any order, the Dominican, Franciscan, Benedictine, whichever, no, you don't really exactly know why. That's all that we call it. It's a vocation, no, a call. Even when you ask a child if his father is a pilot or whatever, you tell him, what will you be doing when you're like your father? He might say he would obviously be a doctor or whatever career his father follows or had followed. And in our case, it's something different. You feel, well, I went for 7 years to a Dominican school and I chose the Augustinian order. It was only casually that the guy next to me used to follow meetings with Augustinians. He used to give me these leaflets he used to get. And, well, he didn't enter the order and I did. So, I mean, it's something it's not that easy to explain. But gradually, yes, you become involved in the life of Augustine. And it's a very interesting life, as anyone who read his biography or the Confessions could tell. Then you start getting a formation, years of formation in a community, where obviously we read about Augustine, we study about Augustine. But then there is something which maybe it's also another vocation now to read Augustine more deeply and perhaps delve into some of his ideas which you've been given initially, and then you start following them and building upon them. And that's what happened. I read a lot of Augustine and I was fascinated by his philosophy and by his life, philosophy, theology, his idea of the church, of communion, whatever, no?
For those who are not so familiar, maybe have not read his biography, could you just sort of outline the context in which he lived a little bit?
Sure. Augustine was born on the 28th of August in 354, quite a long time ago, in the empire now in North Africa, which was part of the Roman Empire, which had turned Christian since Constantine in 313. Well, Augustine had a really troubled life in the sense that he was a very gifted child, and it was an unfortunate decision that his parents, in order not to have him stray away from his academic life, when he was 16 years of age, he had studied whatever there was to know. And in order to go to university, his father needed some money, and they left him for a year to do whatever he liked, as long as he did not lose his great gift of learning. Well, he managed to go through that year, but he remembers his 16th year of his life as what sent him wayward, what really made him lose whatever of morality he had and whatever. Now they left him a 16-year-old, leaving him to do whatever he liked, was, I think, a wrong decision, and he says it was a wrong decision by his parents. But in any case, he made a career. He reached the highest positions in the Roman Empire, in Milan, secretary practically to the emperor, and then lecturing, teaching philosophy in Milan, where he met another great man, St. Ambrose. And hearing this Ambrose preaching, Ambrose solved one of his greatest difficulties, no, about God, about God's relationship with men, and especially evil. The greatest problem was, where does evil come from? Whether it's something tangible, or else whether it's our will which goes wayward. In any case, Ambrose solved this great problem for Augustine. Augustine had no idea or no desire to become a Christian or a Catholic, but when he heard Ambrose, he did, and his mother's prayers and her dealings with Ambrose finally brought Augustine to become a Christian, a Catholic, and he was baptized by Ambrose on the 24th of April in 387, and that triggered off his Christian career. He left his teaching post and gathered some friends, because one thing which maybe few of our audience knows, that Augustine could not live without friends. And he was one who could even draw whoever approached him, either to the good or to evil. Initially he drew them to evil because he had a strong character, and he never followed but was followed, even in evil doings. And that is what he used later on in community life. He drew his friends, he practically made them become baptized, and eventually he also managed to change his mother's mind about him, because she was a bit of a possessive mother. And finally he brought her even to detach herself from things, from whatever held her in life, even from this sort of too great love for her son. And he converted sort of even his mother. And then he became a priest and bishop, and remained in Hippo, in modern Annaba, for 36 years, giving lectures and preaching wherever he was called for.
In fact, about his writings, obviously many people have written about him. What are the primary sources of knowledge about him?
Sure, his greatest works are the Confessions, which he wrote in 397, the Trinity, the 15 books on the Trinity, which is one of the basic theological treatises ever written on the life the life of the divine and the presence of the divine in humanity, and the City of God, the 22 books of the City of God. These are the three major works which Augustine wrote: the Confessions, the Trinity, and the City of God in 22 books.
The book which you've just edited recently, it's in Maltese, the title Il Mara Ulistat, Fitalinta Sant'Augustine. What was the genesis of this latest book?
Well, as you said in the beginning, I've been directing, if the word is okay, in the Augustinian Institute for this last 11 years. We've given lectures every year between September and December, and January and March, and I brought over some of the best minds, academic minds, on the island. I wouldn't like to mention any, but a lot, both lay, both clerical, and clerical. And lately I heard there was some people who said, well, it's a pity, Father, that so much academic work is being lost. And why don't we try to get a few things printed? Because, well, we managed to produce two CDs up to now with the lectures given in the Augustine for All series of lectures. But again, the written word may have a greater impact. And not all the lecturers would leave you the text, or some would have their second thoughts about leaving you a text. Others had only points at their disposition when they gave the lecture. But I made it a point that these last 2 years I tried to encourage them to give me the text itself, even though I had to do a lot of editing. But in any case, 2 years ago we gave 12 lectures on Augustine on women, which, believe me, were very, very interesting, because Augustine's life with women is always an interesting and sometimes a hot topic or whatever. But in any case, I brought also invited Professor Gillian Clark from the University of Bristol. She gave an excellent lecture, and it's printed. And I managed to get 10 lectures which I edited, and I gave the titles of the lectures of these last 2 years, Augustine on women and Augustine on the state. For the second part, Augustine on the state, there is one a very, very good lecture. I must say they're all up to standard, but it was given by Magistrate Dr. Silvio Meli. I met Dr. Meli three or four years ago, and he started attending our lectures and got so involved and so much taken up by Augustine, especially the Augustine seen as himself a magistrate in the episcopal court, the Audiencia Episcopalis. And he wrote this lecture and published it both abroad, and now I brought it also in this book. He gave me permission to print it in this book. And this is the product of 2 years of lectures. I couldn't get the others because they did not have the text or for various other reasons. But that was the genesis of this book.
I'm sure that it was quite a job editing. You do mention it. It comes through your introduction, just how difficult it was. But certainly worth the effort in the end. And very interesting to see the diversity of the people who you actually asked to give lectures. And I think that contributes to the interest in the book because of the different backgrounds of the people involved.
Exactly.
There are various themes, as you say, that run through the book. I mean, the basic one, Il Mara, Ulista, the two main themes. But what do you think really comes out in the book? What can you think of certain themes, certain interesting points that came out in the lectures themselves?
One lecture which surprised me was by Professor Gillian Clark. There was lately a strong contrasting discussion on Augustine's attitude to women. Well, obviously, the fact that he had sent away his girlfriend after having had a child from her, later on he might have had, because of the influence of Manichaeism, a wayward sect which he joined for 9 years, which really had an adverse approach to sex and women especially. Well, some say that Augustine never managed to get rid of this sort of aversion or lack of, appreciation of women. His mother might also have had on him too strong and forceful influence. I doubt whether he would have rebelled, or we could say that he could have rebelled to get away from her clutch, from her clutches, but I don't think so. This particular professor, Gillian Clark, surprised me, not because she spoke quite positively on Augustine, but because according to my opinion, she put the finger on the wound or whatever, no? She hit the nail on the head. She said Augustine can never be considered a woman hater. Augustine himself, on the contrary, now having had extramarital relationships with a woman, having had his mother at the end of her life, he managed to bring her around to let hold of him, in the sense that she gave him up as a sacrifice at the end of her life. She spoke very, very positively, and she got proofs also, proof texts from Augustine's works, especially the Confessions. And she did confute some other authors, which really give a hard time to Augustine on women. And that I really appreciated, not because she spoke positively, but she got proof texts now for Augustine not to be considered as a woman hater, or the one who began this anti-feminism in patristic literature.
Certainly, his mother does come over very strongly. I mean, as a mother of sons myself, I know that Mediterranean women can be quite possessive about their sons, but she really seems to have been an exaggerated example.
The big question is, what about the other two children? I mean, Navetius, younger son, and the girl, which was, I suppose, she was put into a convent very early in her life. But she seems to have concentrated all her efforts, and she made it the goal of her life to not to save this child, but to see that he does not. I told you already, he was a genius, and she knew that it could be either to the good or to the bad, and she made it her the vocation, the goal of her life, to make out of this son of hers a great man to the good. No.
So she didn't make as much fuss about the others?
No, they hardly mentioned. We only know them about them through Augustine, because she followed him in those days, I mean, traveling from North Africa to Rome on ships, all alone, a widow. Is quite a big feat now to follow.
Yes, there's that lovely description of how he, when he was leaving for Rome, and she practically physically held on to him, and he had to leave her with stilts at night before.
But she followed him.
And then she followed him.
Up to Milan, that's something.
Yes, that's absolutely amazing.
Amazing.
Uh-huh. And this. I find it very interesting, this history of the church in that northern litoral of North
Africa. Having
such
great minister, Italian, St. Cyprian, Augustine, and by the 6th century there's no trace of Christianity. It's amazing.
It is amazing, because it must have been so strong.
With so many martyrs, with stories of martyrdom and suffering, and then one of the richest areas of the Roman Empire, and there was no trace of Christianity even a couple of decades after Augustine's death in 430.
Incredible. What there is there, and I've mentioned this before because it had really struck me when I went to Libya, there is an enormous amount of physical evidence of Christianity, which doesn't sort of get mentioned perhaps very much. But every step of the way, from Tripolitania to Cyrenaica, you find baptisteries and
basilicas, tombs.
Absolutely.
And you cannot say that it was a superficial Christianity, because, I mean, so many martyrs, and the North African character is very strong. I mean, you couldn't speak of a superficial presence of Christianity. They were deeply involved Christians, Catholics, no? And they were wiped out. It was wiped out.
That's, and they had this very interesting competition almost between Rome, the communities Rome and Rome.
In fact, Cyprian, the Bishop of Carthage, was is known as the Black Pope, no? Because he was so strong that he even contradicted the Pope, and there was a near schism. But that's amazing, especially with what Augustine contributed to this great culture, no, the North African.
And so, what from this book, you were happy with some of the conclusions. You were happy with some of the conclusions of Professor Clark. Were there others that you found interesting that you think have come out of this book, that has been worth all the work that you put into it?
No, I'm happy about it in the sense that it's not all my work. Obviously, I cannot criticize. In no way. I mean, these men have read Augustine, these contributors, and even the audience which heard these lectures were very, very enthusiastic about them, and it was a very flowing presentation they gave of the lecture, and their conclusions, I think, were also eye-opening, both to the audience who heard them and to myself, who read them 5 or 6 times. And I was very, very satisfied in the sense that what you've sown, you're reaping the results, sort of, in a way. And because they were all, except for one or two, they're all upstarts in Augustine, but there's a very good work also by Anthony Dupont. He'll be giving a lecture himself in November. And he'll be chairing also the Augustine lecture, which you mentioned at the university.
And the book is available at major booksellers, or?
Well, we distribute to the museum library in Blat Albaida, the media center in Birkirkara, the Augustinian Institute in Pietà, and it's 320 pages for 10 euros, and it's a very, the price is very reasonable, I
suppose. Before we finish this interview, because we're coming to the end now, with all your studies and writing, I don't suppose you have much time for leisure reading, but what would you read if you were to put aside your scholarly text, just in a few words?
I'm all taken up by reading Augustine. I have to, because I translate a lot of Augustine. But my original degree was in English, so I read English literature, and I love to read these texts which we studied for our A-level in English literature. Now I read a lot in English, especially these novels, these great novels in English. The classics in English.
That's what you go for. Well, Father Caruana, thank you very, very much for coming to the studio today to tell us about a little bit about Saint Augustine.
It was a pleasure, and thank you for the invitation.
My guest today on Talking Books was the Reverend Dr. Salvino Caruana. I do hope that you can join me again next week when I shall be interviewing Dr. Antonio Tufinio. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.